Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 23rd, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a partly sunny 65 degrees and finally dry here in upstate New York. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Dr. Smartphone, Mind Control, IoT, AI, Musk, and Killer Robots. Now, we talked about Dr. Smartphone. I was on one of those mobile telemetry units where they take a real-time 24/7 stream via cell phone and send your cardiac rhythms to a monitoring center looking for afibrillation. I'm going to tell you, it's off now. I don't have to worry about it today. I mentioned this yesterday, that the device that I was given by my doctor's office was not covered by insurance. It was considered an out-of-network device, $500 up front, and another $667 or $765 for the 30 days of monitoring. So I called my doctor's office and the insurance company to see if there was some other option. And I got the call back this morning to say, no, there is not. The other option is to get an implant. Well, I call total utter bullshit on that. So I took the monitor off. I'm going to send it back. There is no charge if I send it back. And I'm going to see if I can find another cardiologist that does business with a different monitoring company that happens to be covered by insurance. Don't let them trick you. This really has been an eye-opening experience for me as to the deplorable state of our medical establishment. It really, I mean, all the money I paid to go to all these stupid doctor's appointments to be told, well, let's just wait another 6 months and another $60. And hey, how about slap you in the face with a $500 charge to check for something that we're pretty sure you don't have? This is ridiculous. I'm beyond fuming right now. So I'm going to warn you that if my cell phone rings, I may have to take that call because it will be this doctor's office calling me back again to want to know either why I'm not producing rhythms anymore or to tell me that I need to schedule my implant. Not happening. That is an absolute last resort. And before that happens, I'm going to find another office. So thumbs up for cardiologists out there. I just can't even believe I seem to be the only person in all of the Rochester area that has this one huge insurance company that they had no idea that there was a 5-year lawsuit for this product because they wouldn't cover it as a covered piece of equipment. I just can't believe that. I also can't believe that there aren't some sort of kickbacks involved. I've been in the technology industry for a very long time, and you don't ever just carry one solution, and you don't tell customers that they were the only one that ever had this massive problem. Just, I don't know, it's very bad business, and I am not feeling very trustworthy at the moment. So where we go from here, don't worry about my problems. It's just a lot of aggravation every single day. This has been the summer of nightmare for me. We ended the show talking about Elon Musk, killer robots, and him, as well as another 100 AI experts, including companies, going to the UN saying, hey, we got to put a ban on this technology as we have this global war going on between all the different countries and all the different military establishments forming DARPA-esque groups to come up with technology gone completely mad, AI development, and trying to mimic the human brain, AI becoming smarter than humans. We found out there was that AlphaGo game that they beat the world champion, and now we discovered that Elon Musk came out over the weekend to raise the alarm about this military game called Dota 2 that AI beat with military strategy, and he is calling attention to that as the reason why we should proceed with caution. Obviously, if they beat humans in military strategy already at the very beginning of this game, we might have some issues in the future. So back to where we left off 2 days ago, Elon Musk and over 100 AI experts are urging the UN to ban killer robots. Elon Musk and more than 100 leaders and experts in artificial intelligence have come together to urge the UN again to commit to an outright ban on killer robot technology. An open letter signed by Musk, Google's DeepMind, Mustafa Suleiman, and 114 other AI and robotics specialists urged the UN to prevent the, quote, third revolution in warfare by banning the development of all lethal autonomous weapons. The open letter, released to coincide with the world's largest AI conference, which was last week in Melbourne, Australia, warns of a near future where independent machines will be able to choose and engage their own targets, including innocent humans in addition to enemy combatants. Once developed, they will permit armed conflict to be fought at a greater scale than ever, with 45-mile-an-hour drones chasing you down, and at timescales faster than humans can comprehend, the consortium writes. These can be weapons of terror, weapons that despots and terrorists use against innocent populations, and weapons hacked to behave in undesirable ways. This is not the first time that Musk and those of his worldview have united to draw attention to the threat autonomous weapons pose to humanity. SpaceX and Tesla chief is also behind OpenAI, which is a nonprofit devoted to advancing ethical AI research. But despite concerns AI experts are voicing, ongoing delays in developing an effective ban against autonomous weapons have led some to fear the dangers could be beyond regulation, especially given the rapid pace at which AI systems are developing. And I was just remembering, I thought at one point we had covered a story about Google being on some board of some division that was going to come up with a kill switch just in case AI ever gets out of hand. And I would never trust Google to be in charge of that. We had also read about Google being the creation of the CIA in the very beginning. And we're going to get back to some of that as well. So there was a story that came out of a publication, Draper.com, drones reporting for work at 45 miles an hour. This was August 3rd, 2017. Draper equipment UAVs with vision for GPS-denied navigation. When a firefighter or first responder or soldier operates a small lightweight flight vehicle inside of a building or in urban canyons, underground, or under the forest canopy, a GPS-denied environment presents a unique navigational challenge. And in many cases, loss of GPS signal can wreak havoc with these vehicles and cause them to become inoperable and, worst case, unstable, potentially putting operators, bystanders, and property into danger. Attempts have been made to close this gap and give UAVs alternative ways to navigate their environment without GPS. Oh, lucky us. But those attempts have resulted in further information gaps, especially on UAVs whose speeds can outpace the capabilities of their onboard technologies. For instance, scanning LiDAR routinely fails to achieve its location matching with accuracy when UAVs are flying through environments that lack buildings, trees, or other orienting structures. To address these drawbacks, the team from Draper and MIT have developed advanced vision-aided navigation techniques for UAVs that do not rely on external infrastructure such as GPS, detailed maps of the environment, and motion capturing systems. Working together under a contract with who? Well, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, Draper and MIT created a UAV that can autonomously sense and maneuver through unknown environments without external communications or GPS under the Fast Lightweight Autonomy, known as the FLA program. The team developed and implemented unique sensor and algorithm configurations and has conducted time trials and performance evaluations in indoor and outdoor venues. Remember, their next big battlefield, according to DARPA and their Plan X, was the city environment. They want to be able to do well during urban warfare. And it makes you wonder why. The biggest challenge with unmanned aerial vehicles is balancing power, flight time, and capability due to the weight of the technology required to power UAVs, says Robert Trow, a senior member of the technical staff at Draper. And what makes Draper and MIT team's approach so valuable is finding the sweet spot of a small size, weight, and power for an air vehicle with limited onboard computing power to perform a complex mission completely autonomously. Draper and MIT sensors and camera-loaded UAVs were tested in a number of environments ranging from cluttered warehouses to mixed open and tree-filled outdoor environments, ding-a-ling, with speeds of up to 10 meters per second in cluttered areas and 20 meters per second in open areas. The UAV's missions were composed of many challenging elements, including tree dodging, followed by building entry and exit, and long traverses to find building entry points, all while maintaining precise position estimates. The only safe place is going to be underground, people. I'm telling you, this is beyond scary. A faster, more agile, and autonomous UAV means that you will be able to quickly navigate a labyrinth of rooms, stairways, and corridors, or other obstacle-filled environments without a remote pilot. Ted Steiner, a senior member of Draper's technical staff, says, "Our sensing and algorithm configurations and unique monocular camera with its IMU-centric navigation gives the vehicle agile maneuvering and improved reliability and safety, and the capabilities in demand by first responders, commercial users, military personnel, and anyone designing and building UAVs. Draper's contribution to the DARPA FLA program, documented in a recent research paper for the Aerospace Conference 2017 IEEE, was a novel approach to state estimation, the vehicle's position, orientation, and velocity, called SAMWISE, smoothing and mapping with inertial state estimation. SAMWISE is a fused vision and inertial navigation system that combines the advantages of both sensing approaches and accumulates error more slowly over time than either technique on its own, producing a full position, altitude, and velocity state estimate throughout the vehicle's trajectory. The result is a navigation solution that enables a UAV to retain all 6 degrees of freedom and allows it to fly autonomously without the use of GPS or any communication with vehicle speeds of up to 45 miles per hour. And that is what nightmares are made of. The team's focus on FLA program has been on UAVs, but advances made through the program could potentially be applied to ground, marine, and underwater systems, which could be especially useful in GPS-degraded and denied environments. In developing the UAV, teams leveraged Draper and MIT's expertise in autonomous path planning, machine vision, and GPS-denied navigation and dynamic flight controls. So here we go, guys. So much for banning killer robots. All they got to do is arm one of these suckers. And now we're going to have autonomous 45-mile-an-hour drones that are well-adapted in urban warfare, households, down stairways, under treed venues to chase you faster than you could possibly run and even potentially drive. So I came up with another story, August 18th, 2017, out of the express.co.uk, AI takeover. Scientists develop self-healing robots that can treat themselves when stabbed. Now, I mentioned a few different times over the last few days that we had been rewatching some of the Terminator movies. I gotta say, and they even mentioned that in the Elon Musk UN story. They talked about the T-800, which is out of Terminator. I mean, this is a very scary future, and any of us who care about what's going to happen here in the next 50 years, let's say, and even before that, I would imagine, I have to be concerned about some of the mad science that we are developing. Robots are now able to generate and heal, regenerate and heal themselves after being stabbed as the artificial intelligence surge continues. Scientists have now developed soft, flexible materials that can heal themselves when things go awry. Researchers at the Free University of Brussels in Belgium created a gripper, which is a robot hand and an artificial muscle with all the ability to heal itself using rubbery polymers that look a bit like jelly. When torn or cut, they can knit themselves back together if heated gently. And Bram van der Brot, who led the research, says the polymer is lots of different strands that lock together to form a material. And when you add heat, they reorganize and stick back together without leaving any weak spots. Mr. Van der Brot and his colleagues hope to make the self-healing properties automatic by either altering the material or by making robots that can apply heat to themselves. He says, at the moment when ordinary robot parts break, they have to be replaced, but that's soon going to change. I've just been going through such a difficult 3 months, and then I read stuff like this, and this is like the one thing that fuels me on a daily basis to want to get up, because there's so much else. Because this stuff is so important and this stuff is happening right now. And most people think that this is lunatic stuff, but it's not. This is stuff that they are using taxpayer dollars and military-funded technology that's going to be coming to a battlefield and to an urban warfare battlefield near you, you know, as they shove the shiv between different factions in this country and we start having protests that get out of hand. Don't think that these technologies won't be things that are going to be out there helping first responders. The development of being able to use soft material with robots is significant as it helps with the robots picking up delicate items such as fruit and vegetables and could be important for uses within the food industry, particularly on factory sorting lines with softer materials, which would help avoid and prevent harmful accidents. A team of biomedical scientists at the University of Oxford said in March this year that in the future growing of tissue grafts on humanoid robots, this could be a likely possibility. These would be the skin jobs. And previously, stuff of science fiction nightmares with Terminator-style robots, ding, ding, the scientists say that the development could offer, quote, new opportunities in science and medicine, assisting in the growth of musculoskeletal tissue grafts for tissue transplant applications. Experts at Artificial Intelligence Research Group OpenAI, there they are again, issued a report in March, so this is a previous report, that they had developed robots that had managed to complete tasks by learning to communicate with one another in a brand new language that it created. The robots learned to collaborate. And there was a story over the last few weeks that that very robot was shut down because they felt that it could become dangerous. It created a language itself to communicate amongst themselves. The robot learned to collaborate and communicate through trial and error, remembering the symbols, words, and signals that helped them to achieve the goal. Do, do, do. Let that be a lesson to the future. So now here's a story out of the OpenAI Institute. Teaching AI Systems to Behave Themselves, August 13th, 2017. At OpenAI, the artificial intelligence lab founded by Tesla's chief executive Elon Musk, machines are teaching themselves to behave like humans. But sometimes this goes wrong. Sitting inside OpenAI's San Francisco office on a recent afternoon, the researcher Dario Amodele showed off an autonomous system that taught itself to play a game called Coast Runners, which is an old boat racing video game. The winner is the boat with the most points that could cross the finish line. But, you know, who would have thunk it? The results were surprising. The boat was far too interested in the little green widgets that popped up on the screen, and catching these widgets meant scoring points. So rather than trying to finish the game, just like any little greedy little kid would do, the boat went on a point craze, and it drove in endless circles, colliding with other vessels, skidding into stone walls, and repeatedly catching fire just to go after the green little widgets to gain points. Kind of forgot its primary mission. Mr. Amodai's burning boat demonstrated the risks of the AI techniques that are rapidly remarketing the tech world. Researchers are building machines that can learn tasks largely on their own, and that's how Google's DeepMind created a system that could beat the world's best player at the ancient game of Go. It's interesting that Mustafa Suleiman, the Google AI guy, is actually involved with Elon Musk and his warning to the UN. But as these machines train themselves through hours of data analysis, they may also find their way to unexpected, unwanted, and even harmful behavior. That's a concern that these techniques move into the online services, security, devices, and robotics. And now a small community of AI researchers, including Mr. Amodai, is beginning to explore the mathematical techniques that aim to keep the worst from happening. At OpenAI, Mr. Amodai and his colleague Paul Cristiano are developing algorithms that can not only learn tasks through hours of trial and error, but also receive regular guidance from human teachers along the way. And with a few clicks here and there, the researchers now have a way of showing the autonomous system that it needs to win points in Coast Runner while also moving toward the finish line. They believe that if these kinds of algorithms, a blend of human and machine instruction, can help keep automated systems safe. Well, good thing. I mean, guys, this really is out of hand, and it's all fueled by cash, and nobody gives a shit except apparently Elon Musk, who also wants to build a... neural mesh, so we can compete with the machine to upload you or to connect you to artificial intelligence. I mean, guys, I don't know who I trust anymore. I have my doctors sending me down wrong paths who are only interested in monetary payback, not my ultimate good outcome. Who can you trust these days? I don't even know. And it really is a testament to the humanity that I am seeing out there. Makes me very sad that humanity seems to have failed many, many times over. I hope that someday we are not judged on the decisions that we have made by the decisions that others are making. For years, Mr. Musk, along with other pundits, philosophers, and technologists, have warned the machines could spin outside of our control and somehow learn malicious behavior that their designers didn't anticipate. And let Tay be an example of that. At times, these warnings have seemed overblown, given that today's autonomous car systems can even get tripped up by the most basic tasks, like recognizing a bike lane or a red light. But researchers like Mr. Amodai are trying to get ahead of the risks. And in some ways, these scientists, what they are doing is a bit like parent teaching a child right from wrong. And many specialists in AI believe that a technique called reinforcement learning, which is a way for machines to learn specific tasks through extreme trial and error, could be a primary path to artificial intelligence. Researchers specify a particular reward the machine should strive for, and as it navigates a task at random, the machine keeps close track of what brings the reward and what doesn't. And when OpenAI trained its bots to play Coast Runner, the reward was more points, and the video game training has real-world implications. If a machine can learn to navigate a racing game like Grand Theft Auto, researchers believe it can learn to drive a real car. And if it can learn to use a web browser and other common software apps, it can learn to understand natural language and maybe even carry on a conversation. And at places like Google and the University of California at Berkeley, robots have already used the technique to learn simple tasks of picking things up and opening a door. And that is why Mr. Modi and Mr. Cristiano are working to build reinforcement learning algorithms that accept human guidance. What do they do when it starts saying no along the way? And this can ensure that these systems do not stray from the task at hand. Together with others at London-based DeepMind, a lab owned by Google, the two OpenAI researchers recently published some of their research in this area, spanning two of the world's top AI labs. The two hadn't really worked together in the past, which that should be disturbing as well. And these algorithms are considered a notable step forward in AI safety research. Ding, ding. That's going to be a new buzzword. This validates a lot of previous thinking, says Dylan Hatfield-Mennell, a researcher at the University of California, Berkeley. These types of algorithms hold a lot of promise over the next 5 to 10 years. This is a small field, but it is growing. And as OpenAI and DeepMind build teams dedicated to AI and safety, so too is Google's stateside lab, Google Brain. And meanwhile, researchers at universities at like UC Berkeley and Stanford are working on similar problems, often in collaboration with the big corporate laboratories. But in some cases, researchers are working to ensure that systems don't make mistakes on their own, as the Coast Runner's boat did. They are also working to ensure that hackers and other bad actors can't exploit hidden holes in these systems. Researchers like Google's Ian Goodfellow, for example, are exploring ways that hackers could fool AI systems into seeing things that aren't there. And modern computer robot googly eye vision is based on what are called deep neural networks, which are pattern recognition systems that can learn tasks by analyzing vast amounts of data. But by analyzing thousands of dog photos, cat photos, a neural network can learn to recognize a dog or a cat, and this is how Facebook identifies faces and snapshots, and how Google instantly searches for images inside of photo applications. But Mr. Goodfellow and others have shown that hackers can alter images so that neural networks will believe that they include things that aren't really there. That's kind of scary. And just by changing a few pixels in the photo of an elephant, for example, they can fool the neural network to think that it is depicting a car. And that becomes problematic when neural networks are used in security cameras. Simply by making a few marks on your face, you could fool a camera into believing that you are someone else. And if you train an object recognition system on millions of images labeled by humans, you could still create new images where a human and the machine disagree 100% of the time, said Mr. Goodfellow. We need to understand that phenomenon. And if one thing has been clear here over all the stuff that we've read about AI, is that they really don't know what they are doing. We are children in this laboratory that we are calling Earth, and we are experimenting with things and letting things go into the ether that shouldn't be free because we don't quite understand how it works. Guys, this should be very worrying to everyone. I would say kill all robots. Robots are not good. They will not be good for humanity's future. AI, which would be the ghost in the machine, cannot be fully released to the internet, and Google has done that. Remember, the head of search engine stepped down last year, I believe it was, and they put the head of AI in charge of the search engine. And since that time, we've had all kinds of things like fake news and fake news searching algorithms that go out and bag and tag things that are considered not true to be able to filter your news for you. And this is going to become more and more prevalent in the future, as everything we say that does not agree with popular opinion is deemed hate speech. And this is worrying to me. And once they start dispatching the drones and the killer robots out to find you, you rabble rouser, and to bring you in because you might be a danger to yourself or others, well, then people will be worrying about it. But until it's in their faces, this is all just hearsay. And I'm going to say, no, it isn't. Because this stuff is all being groomed and designed to take people like us out who are deemed a danger. And you are a danger if you are not singing the praises of those who are in charge. Another big worry is that AI systems will learn to prevent humans from turning them off. Ding, ding. I say that that will be a number one lesson. And if the machine is designed to chase a reward, the thinking goes, it may find that it can chase that reward only if it stays on. And that's a very good point. This often described threat is much further off, but researchers are already working to address it. Mr. Hatfield Mennell and others at UC Berkeley recently published a paper that takes a mathematical approach to this problem. The machine will seek to preserve its off switch, they showed. And if it is specifically designed to be uncertain about the reward function, this gives it an incentive to accept or even seek out human oversight, which I doubt it's going to do because there is no reward in that. And much of this work is still theoretical, but given the rapid progress of AI techniques and this growing importance across many industries, researchers believe that starting early is the best policy. There's a lot of uncertainty around exactly how rapid progress in AI is going to be, says Shane Legg, an overseer of the AI safety work at DeepMind. The responsible approach is trying to understand different ways in which these technologies can be misused, different ways in which they can fail, in different ways in dealing with these issues. Well, that didn't stop the Air Force Research Laboratory. IBM develops a quote-unquote brain-like supercomputer for the U.S. Air Force Research Laboratory. Technology company IBM is developing a new supercomputer powered by 64 True North chips for use by the U.S. Air Force Research Lab as part of a collaboration announced in June. The new brain-like supercomputer will be used for analytics involving patterns and object recognition, as well as sensory processing. The True North neurosynaptic system has been designed to imitate human neurons and can convert audio, video, and other forms of data received by the sensors into symbols, which the computer can then process. And didn't we just read about a very similar system where they converted them into symbols and then used those symbols to communicate amongst themselves in their own developed language? Oh, caution, Will Robinson, because this seems kind of dangerous. This is being developed for warfare purposes. It is capable of performing advanced computation using less energy than conventional chips. And the Air Force Research Laboratory principal electronic engineer, Kui Wu, says that, quote, this is about building more intelligent machines that will work with humans to make the human operator and analyst more effective and efficient when dealing with data. Yeah, that would be a pitch line if I ever heard one. The major advantage of this chip is that it runs machine learning algorithms, the same ones as we run, the same functionality, the same accuracy, but with less power dissipation. The chip features a million neurons and was developed by the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA's System of Neuromorphic Adaptive Plastic Scalable Electronic Program, which would be their Synapse program. This is about building more intelligent machines that works with humans to make human operators and analysts more effective and efficient when dealing with data. IBM's brain-inspired computing group leader researcher Domenera Modera says that the neurons communicate through using systems of patterns and pulses the way human neurons use electrical pulses, and they are packed inside of a cluster interconnected cores across the chips, which then each core is also holding components for information storage, processing, and communication. True North capabilities allow the defense personnel to make better decisions by quickly combining and combing through data and locating vital information. This Synapse program seeks to develop computer systems with brain-like learning and problem-solving capabilities. I mean, I don't know what else to say, guys. It is coming, and I don't see a way to stop it. But it is from every direction, and all the different countries all have manned science laboratories where they're working on very similar technology. So here's a story out of labbiotech.eu. The robots are coming. AI, is it the future of biotechnology? AI, or artificial intelligence, has taken root in biotech, and in this article, the contributor explores its newfound niches in the industry. AI or machine learning has become ubiquitous in tech startups, funded largely by the increasing availability and the amount of data and cheaper, more powerful computers. Now, if you are a new tech startup, machine learning or AI capabilities represent your minimum ticket to enter the industry. And over the past few years, AI and machine learning have started to peek their heads in the realm of biotech due to an analogous transformation of biotech data. We are beginning to see partnerships form between big pharma and biotech startups that employ AI and machine learning for drug discovery and other purposes. Positive results have already come out of joint projects, notably the delay of the onset of motor neuron disease in an efficacy study conducted by Citran on a drug candidate proposed by a company called Benevolent Bio. It's a good name. And with these results in mind, we must ask ourselves the question, what is the role of AI and machine learning now and also in the future of biotech? Well, diagnostic assays today are usually developed once and only updated when there is a significant paradigm shift. But because of this, there are missed opportunities to improve assays when a true result of previous diagnoses become known. However, machine learning techniques can immediately use the true result to improve the diagnostic test. And this means that the more diagnostic tests that are run, the more accurate the test results can become. Currently, the most obvious implementation of machine learning techniques for diagnostics lies in a genetic analysis. Sophia Genetics, which is a Swiss startup founded in 2011, exemplifies this state of the art. They initially intake a biopsy or blood sample from a patient, process the sample, and then analyze the data with powerful analytic AI algorithms. The Sophia Genetics, the data analysis takes a few days within its platform rather than several months like current standards. And while speed is clearly a benefit, the long-term advantage is that machine learning algorithms that are behind the AI analysis enables the diagnostic process to become smarter with each iteration. And that would be like IBM's Watson is doing as well. Besides genetic analysis, ML techniques can be used in any diagnostics that can be digitized, allowing the algorithm to determine the correct quote-unquote features to embed in its final decision-making process. DNA analytics demonstrates another use of machine learning in diagnostics, and that would be using the advanced computations to help diagnose rheumatoid arthritis. This would be Dr. Watson calling Dr. Watson. Taking out the tedious tasks done in the lab, such as designing constructs for gene editing or data analysis, are slowly being handed over to AI programs as well as a sort of secretarial work. And again, robots are going to come take all the jobs, including the white-collar jobs where we had well-paying positions. Desktop Genetics has created a novel platform to design gene editing constructs using CRISPR that can also work through AI. So AI CRISPR, that one's got to leave you warm and fuzzy. Their gene editing platform follows the entire process from selecting proper sgRNA molecules to analyzing the data of the experiment. The power of AI allows them to more quickly and effectively construct CRISPR libraries that may be needed for a single experiment or for an entire laboratory, especially for people who do not have much experience working for CRISPR or working with CRISPR. This platform is valuable to not only expedite the process of designing to conducting an experiment, but also to ensure that the guidelines are effective as they can be, improving efficacy of gene editing. So we're going to have AI gene editing now as well. For scientists who want quicker, easier data analysis, there are also startups focused on using AI to look for as many types of data. H2O AI is an open source platform in which people can analyze data using thousands of different statistical analysis models. And while H2O.AI is an industry agnostic, there are a few startups focused specifically on healthcare and biotech data, alleviating the burden of data analysis from healthcare providers, those overworked healthcare providers. Increasingly, more data is being generated, but it is not all of this data can be used, much less appropriately at the moment. And these startups are aiming to reduce the bottleneck of data analysis to take advantage of the rich data sets that do exist. Arguably, the most exciting advances in biotech and the ones that probably have them rubbing their hands together to make the most money has been in drug discovery. content, current drug discovery economics are unsustainable, with costs now averaging over $2.5 billion in 12 years of trialing for a single drug, which would then qualify the out-of-this-world pricing. The low-hanging fruit have already been picked, yet new approaches have not risen to reach the higher-hanging ones. However, AI and machine learning hope to be a solution for big pharma that they've been looking for. The computing technologies promise to make drug discovery cheaper and quicker, and effectively making the time needed for lead discovery to a small fraction of what it is today. Partnerships are already forming, look out, between young startups and pharma giants, and we should expect more to come at an increasing rate. Several approaches exist for startups to make these advances happen. Some startups are focused on leveraging the increasing amount of genetic data and cheap sequencing that approach drug discovery from a genetic standpoint. Others are employing computer vision to analyze images of cells that have been treated with drug compounds, which eliminate the need for scores of PhDs. Again, they'll be out of jobs too, to painstakingly peer into a microscope and screen for thousands of compounds of interest. While few companies are taking a structure-based approach to drug discovery, using machine learning to find small molecules could provide a benefit to therapeutics based on known target structures. Lastly, startups like Benevolent Bio use AI to pore over vast existing scientific data. With those results, they can make use of previously conducted studies to better inform future experiments and to clue researchers into possible missteps in previous trials, or even better, designations for drugs. With AI and machine learning seeping into more and more parts of biotech, what will the future bring? Well, lab assistants, startups, and diagnostics are trying to make healthcare providers and scientists more effective at their jobs. And this author foresees the incorporation of tech making the pie bigger for almost everyone in these spaces. So don't worry about it. The robots won't come take your job. For drug discovery, this seems to be a less symbiotic relationship at play with their customers. The startups act as drug candidates as a service companies, selling their findings to those who have the capital for both financial and human to push the candidates further down the research pipeline. And yet, aside from IBM Watson's initiative, large companies seem content to outsource this lead discovery and step into R&D. Are they short-sighted? What happens when the current behemoth when these small startups creep further into the R&D pipeline, conducting their own clinical trials and eventually selling the drugs they find themselves? Good question. If we assume that the infusion of AI and machine learning into biotech will only increase, there seems to be only two outcomes. Large companies with cash to spare will start acquiring these startups early and embedding their computational techniques into the current R&D, or the current market leaders will slowly lose their grip on drug development to tech-enabled biotechs and become content-producing generic drugs at best. And with all the good aspects of AI and biotech, there are a few challenges that could put a damper on progress. And most notably, the large volume of data is often stored in disparate or incompatible mediums, making it difficult to consolidate results and to draw upon entire wealths of data. Furthermore, data privacy is also a concern, particularly for companies who are using the cloud to analyze patient-derived data. But at least in the U.S. trailblazers, they have already jumped this hurdle, so they say. So overall, AI and ML are coming to biotech, and they are here to stay. But what exactly will happen is still up for debate. And AI biotech companies are still being formed. So good investment, people. With the future of biotech being written at this moment, who is writing it and who are they writing it for? It's another good question. So I don't know, guys. This is something that we should be keeping an eye on, because not only is it going to be killer robots and everything we do being scanned by the machine, but they're going to be incorporating our biological data into the database and then be running algorithms and machine learning against our data to be able to draw a more complete profile of you. So here's a good one that I came up with back about a week ago. Artificial intelligence putting machines to work for the spies. Machines that can learn and make decisions for themselves are seen as a way to keep up with the crush of data that potentially could detect the next terrorist attack. You know, and when they have your genetic information, they will know certain ways that you could be taken out on a selective basis with a certain spray sprayed over your house that won't hurt anybody else except for you that it was genetically targeted for. Whiteboards line the walls of this lab deep inside of the Defense Intelligence Agency's Washington headquarters, covered from floor to ceiling with hand-scrawled computer code and technical notes. But one item stands out at the center of the room's rear wall. Quote, attention should be given to opinion, comments, and jokes of common people, unquote. This axiom from the original ICADA training manual was a reminder from the terror network's leadership to its foot soldiers that even the most benign communications can provide invaluable lessons about the enemy. Ding, ding. It is posted next to another quotation, this one from Department of Intelligence Agency DIA's director, Vincent Stewart, that says 90% of intelligence is publicly available information. This expression echoes a key theme guiding the DIA's work in helping America fight its modern wars, but they also serve as a harsh reminder to one of the greatest limitations facing the shadow agency. Information is everywhere, and it is collected deliberately or incidentally, personally or digitally, and agents have access to an ever-growing cache of data from sources, surveillance, and social media that easily overwhelm their limited ability to sift, sort, and organize information into actionable intelligence. And without intelligence, the next plan to attack a U.S. city might be successful, and the next ambush of American troops could be fatal. So there is much data out there now, says Robert Dixon, junior special advisor for the program, in a transition within the DIA's innovation office. Everything is about information, and you need to be able to predict what your adversaries might be doing next. And as a result, one of those central focuses of the DIA's intelligence efforts is swiftly advancing technology that allows computers to think for themselves, known as machine learning, artificial intelligence, or simply AI, to recognize trends, patterns, or associations in so-called quote-unquote big data, and to help ease the burden on analysts, those poor overworked analysts, who have infinite tweets to scrub for potential extremist plots and countless of hours of drone footage to pore over. In some ways, the U.S. government is behind its adversaries in the use of artificial intelligence, and the authoritarian regimes in China and Russia, for example, depend for survival on detecting and rooting out domestic subversion and have had a free hand to apply the technology unburdened by complaints about civil rights, privacy, or appropriateness. Ding, ding. Russia has had fewer qualms than the U.S. about what kinds of instruments of war it connects to AI, including their military development of armed, unmanned vehicles, similar to the ground-to-base drones, a concept that the U.S. has by policy hesitated to embrace. And China, meanwhile, has excelled at developing AI through vast numbers of well-trained computer engineers who program these machines using data unrivaled in volume produced by 1.4 billion countrymen and smartphones they carry. Remember, we read a story about China offering large amounts of funds, even from just their cities, to bring in AI companies to perform research within China. There is a huge incentive for them to get on top of AI and to develop the winning machine. And guys, I'm telling you, this really has become a global war, and it is going to end in us being defeated. The U.S., which principally sees AI as a national security tool to be employed on the battlefield or to thwart terror attacks in both countries, and with that, AI is also emerging as a crucial tool for recognizing and defending or deflecting cyber attacks. We talked about that. There was that Mayhem software from Carnegie Mellon, which now occur too late, too fast for any human to anticipate and to foil, and the shortcomings are even more unsettling. So let's release it into the machine. industry is behind the curve right now, with cyber defense not keeping up with offense, says Matt DeVost, a managing director at Accenture Security and a frequent advisor to the government on cybersecurity issues. We have a shortage of human capital, he says, and so we don't have enough skilled people to engage in the ever-expanding cyber defense mission. That means we have to augment the folks we have with AI and machine learning to get the more value out of the human layer. And further hobbling U.S. war planners, so of course it's all in the name of national security, is a tradition hardened over decades of spending defense dollars in a slow and cumbersome manner that allows for the careful development of new projects, like an aircraft carrier designed to last for decades. That model hasn't been quick enough to keep up with the rate at which Islamist extremists use social media, or that China or Russia have invested in their militaries in recent years. So the DIA, now through its new Innovation Hub office, is trying out a new way to solicit ideas from AI experts. The assembled technicians and analysts in the lab on this day are receiving pitches from private companies, and that was something that the Department of Defense rolled out a while ago. I don't remember the name of the program, but they opened up bidding to all commercial entities, even if they weren't a government supplier, to show off products that they believe can solve the problems the DIA have identified. In this third session since the program began 6 months ago, participants could be awarded as much as $250,000 in seed money to develop a program or technology for DIA to evaluate its potential investment. The agency has so far doled out over $2 million on six projects over this last fiscal year, and the money comes from taxpayer dollars in the dedicated DIA budget, though it also partners with the Defense Innovation Unit Experimental, and that was the other one, the DIUX that we had talked about, to fund some projects. That's out of the DOD. The pitching days are a part of a broader Defense Department effort to invest more in nimble warfare technology, borrowing from a recent trend that produced offices like the DIUX, accelerated under Ash Carter's defense secretary, and to find modern tools to quickly fight current wars. The government in the past has been very bureaucratic, focused on structure, rigor, and at times adverse to change, but this will be streamlined, and the process will become more efficient. And the kinds of technologies the DIA is currently considering funding are straight out of spy movies. One company that pitched last week actually referenced Jason Bourne film series to show how it could track a particular face, in this case, actor Matt Damon's, across a series of disparate video clips. And a program like that could be used to automatically identify a target across multiple closed-circuit surveillance cameras, such as that movie, the thriller movies commonly depict. I'm telling you guys, the drones at 45 miles an hour are going to be tracking you wherever you go. Daniel Osher, a president of Integral Mind, says that he has developed a tool that can help explain cultural nuances, like the role religion plays, for example, and then create a program that can, he says, accurately predict how an international incident will play out. Osher says that his program could have anticipated the violent uprisings that led to a 1993 Black Hawk Down scenario in Mogadishu, Somalia, and accurately predicted how the 2015 Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, better known as Iran nuclear deal, would finalize, including what outcomes each side would demand and how they would ultimately agree. This is crazy. The technology is built on what he calls mind maps, computer programs that his company creates through targeted interviews with people from a particular country to help determine what informs their decisions in order to predict how they might react to certain provocations. And this could be an instrument for the wars the U.S. currently fight against extremism, where winning over local support is important as eliminating enemy combatants. In this nebulous warfare, where you have to convince people that you are right, the mind has become the new battle space, he says, shortly after finishing his presentation to the full lab of DIA analysts and technicians. This will help them understand who to trust and how to influence them, and that's how you get yourself into their heads. Ding, ding, ding. That's where they want to be, is in your head. You are an insurgent, and it is the new battle space. Right out of the horse's mouth. AI is so new that the U.S. doesn't yet have laws completely governing its use. and they don't want to, or answering the key questions of how involved humans should be in the decision-making process, particularly in determining when computers may decide whether or not to carry out its own lethal action, i.e. killer robots. You can never take humans out of the loop, Dixon says, and he expresses high confidence that protections are in place, which we found out, no, they're not, that he would prevent, for example, a drone determining for itself that it should launch a missile, adding that the technology is too new to know exactly how frequently a human being belongs in the decision-making process. Some critics question why the government is relying on AI technology before those questions have clear answers, and I would question that as well. What we are doing is for the national security of our nation, he says. That is an incentive right there. Well, Dixon, I'm going to flip you right off, because national security is never an incentive to put killer robots in charge. The other experts are concerned about a more seemingly benign decisions that could have even greater catastrophic effects. Futurists worry about a world in which a machine decides to undercut a foreign military's currency in an attempt to give its own military a greater edge, precipitating global financial collapse. Ding, ding, ding. Again, I see that happening too. This is a real serious challenge, says Paul Scharr, director from the Center for a New America's Security Technology in the National Security Program and a former advisor to the Secretary of Defense on writing the rules for new age technologies like drones. It is not a reason to use the technology, but when we think about how to employ it, we need to think about how the human interface, the transparency, and the vulnerability of AI and how to train people in how to use the system. In many ways, he says, there is no alternative to exploring how the U.S. military could better employ AI. We're drowning in data, he says. We have massive amounts of data. Well, whose fault is that? Because that's not ours. We have massive amounts of data that we are collecting from terrorists and other operations, and sifting through that data is just not possible anymore by putting human eyes and ears on it. So we need to give it all to the machine. So back to a story 2 days ago, we had ended the show on how the CIA made Google inside the secret network behind mass surveillance, endless war, and Skynet. Well, it seems that all of the alphabet agencies are involved in creating Skynet. It isn't going to be just one company out there. And we have all the commercial companies now bidding in a bidding orgy to get onto contract of some kind to have the alphabet agencies utilize their product in keeping the nation safe. In a rare 2002 profile in Wired magazine, reporter Douglas McRae described how Andrew Marshall, now 93 years old, as the DOD's most elusive but one of its most influential officials. McRae added that Vice President Dick Cheney, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, and Deputy Secretary Paul Wolfowitz widely considered the hawks of the neoconservative movement in American politics were among, or all a bunch of losers, were all among Marshall's star proteges. Speaking at a low-key Harvard University seminar a few months after 9/11, Highland Forum's founding president, Richard O'Neill, and that Highland Forum was one of the ones that helps create Google, said that Marshall was much more than a regular fixture at the forum. Andy Marshall is one of our co-chairs, so indirectly, everything that goes back into Andy's system, he told the audience, directly, people who are at the forum's meetings may be going back and giving briefings to Andy on a variety of topics to synthesize things. And he also says that the forum has a third co-chair, and that'd be the director of the Defense Events Research Project Agency at the time, more affectionately known as DARPA, which at that time was a Rumsfeld appointee, which would make you feel warm and fuzzy, Anthony J. Tether. And before joining DARPA, Tether was the vice president of SAIC's advanced technology sector. Highland's forum influence on U.S. defense policy is thus operated through three main channels, and that would be its sponsorship of the Office of Secretary of Defense, which was around the middle of the last decade. This was transitioned to the Office of Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, which is probably the DIA as well, and a direct link to DIA. So it's all corrupt.